Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, complete recording, November 14, 2017.
Two items, the approval of minutes.
Somebody move.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Ryan, all in favor?
Aye.
Let's go.
Okay, first item is the 2018-19 budget discussion. If you remember from last meeting, we presented, talked about recommending to do the Act 1 opt-out resolution. There was some discussion with the board about kind of getting a preliminary view of what our contractual obligations would be before that decision was made and what direction we were going. So we went back and we did that. So we're going to start this presentation. So the things that I looked at that I know definitely numbers that we can, you know, put out here to say that this will be increases for next year. I looked at wages and salaries. There is a caveat. Under wages and salaries, I was able to forecast out administration, teachers, support staff. That contract expires June 30th of this year, so we will be heading into negotiations with BEC. Obviously, budget line items will be status quo for BEC negotiations. That's obvious so that we don't identify what we're budgeting for that for negotiation purposes. So for this exercise, I did leave them at status quo and did not include them in here, so you have to keep that in the back of your mind. So looking at administrators, teachers, less retirements. And I did do a savings on retirements. That's status quo on kind of where we lean with retirements happening. Obviously, if there's more retirements, those numbers will come down a little bit. Just to give you a heads up on the teacher salary, based on our negotiations when we had costed this out, that number does include the smooth out of retirements that happened in this fiscal year, because that projected number was supposed to be $1.4 million, based upon when we were in negotiations and we were doing the cost plan for that. So that does include the current staffing that we have in place right now, because we did have some retirements coming into this year. So the savings of $300,000 includes taking a look at what would happen at the end of this year. So benefits, PEASERS is the projected, and I don't know where this is going to land, because they said finally we had a positive, or we met the rate that we needed to meet. So the projected out was taking us from 32.57% to 34.18%. So I don't know where PEASERS is going to certify, but that's what that number represents, is the 34.18%. I hope it doesn't go there, but we'll see. The health insurance, the other thing here, I did it at a 6.5% rate. We actually got First Look rates in, and First Look rates are maintaining steady. So right now they're not projecting an increase in our health insurance. I'm trying to figure out why. What's causing that factor with our experience? We are part of CPAS, which is a self-insurance trust, so unfortunately their meeting was today. I was not able to attend that, but I have inquiries in on why. But that health insurance number is one that does account for a 6.5% increase to our health insurance.
So it could be less.
Could be less. Okay. So looking at that, the subtotal is about 2.7. In fairness, to make sure that we identify all things in the big areas, because transportation has been a big topic of discussion, I have to take into account that Cedarbrook is going back into one building and that we're looking at a new transportation contract. So we're estimating that on the first year of the contract with the Cedarbrook getting back into one building and the new contract, we'll have about a $600,000 savings. So I'm putting that against, because that if it was the opposite way, I would be showing it. So that puts us at about $2.1 million with our contracted obligations. Debt service is another big area for us, but if you remember, We smoothed out at $10 million for a few years until we make a decision on moving forward with borrowing new money. So right now, we're at about a $10 million number that doesn't flux too much until we make any changes with borrowing new money. So this is a snapshot of just taking a look at a zero based all the way up to index, which is 2.4%. So I did what our budget would look like, I did what our millage rate would look like, what that increase would be, and what that impact is on a median homeowner in our district. I just got the county assessment estimates in for the tax cert for 2018, so that's the 1.872 number. That number did go down slightly. It impacted our mill. I think when I did the millage calculation, I was at a little bit above 2 million. So it brought us down for our millage rate to about 1.9 with that. So this is what it looks like. Going up to 2.4, we get an additional about $2 million of revenue. Our millage increase would be 1.1 some change, which would take us from 45.95 to 47. So it would impact the median homeowner annually of about $159. So these are the slides that I presented last meeting. It's just talking about what Act 1 is and what the Act 1 index is. This is the history. This was a good slide to show to kind of see where we were and how we got here and what we're doing right now. And then basically where we're at right now is the discussion about next steps. We have, if you remember from last meeting, we have two options. Go through a preliminary budget where that is where we have the ability to apply for exceptions to go above index. Or we do an opt-out resolution which identifies that we will not raise taxes above the 2.4. I need to adopt a preliminary budget no later than February 14th. Or adopt a resolution no later than January 26th. At this point, though, in order for me to prepare for a preliminary budget, I would need to start that process now because you have to advertise or some things that you need to do with the preliminary budget. So coming up, I would just need to know what direction that we are going to go in. This is the budget timeline that you've seen that PDE puts out. This gives you those key dates. This is kind of where we're at right now. I've added in the prelim budget just because I didn't know where we were going to land with it. So we're in the October and December phase. We have, administration has started budget discussions. Allocations have been released to buildings. They're all working on getting it inputted. I will have all data inputted into the system by December 1st, and I'll be able to do some analysis in order to start compiling the first of the budget.
So the question now, and hopefully we'll have some conversation and what bit of time you guys have left in here, is really this. So the ability to go with an opt-out resolution, again, no higher than index, but that allows the administration to realistically have some guidance from the board as to what they're working with and build a budget, you know, with a timeline that they've used for the past 2 years. From a process perspective, of course, that's the board placing some level of, guide rails. You can't go above 2.4 once you approve the opt-out resolution. I don't think we can go back on that and say, never mind. The flip side is to go through a preliminary budget, which means that the budget building process is, I don't want to call it, the intensity and speed is ramped up a notch because you're effectively building a budget in the next month and a half, 2 months, that would otherwise take 3 or 4 months to do it in that sort of a thorough manner. That being said, any board questions or comments? Let's start on this.
Thanks. So if I read this correctly, we have about $120,000 shortfall between the total in terms of the additional cost and $300,000 savings, mm-hmm. and what we could get at index. And I guess rhetorically, that's close to being even in the grand scheme of things. So my follow-up would be, Are we then assuming that there are no other costs, at least in totality, for the rest of the budget that go up significantly, and or can we come close to having that be zero or maybe even saving a little bit of money so that we can stay within 2.4% and not have to go beyond the index and also not have to go into our reserves that significantly?
There's a couple of things that are happening next year that are going to have an impact on budget. One, obviously the huge one is Cedar Brook. There's some things on the salary side. We've had MOUs because obviously there's people disjointed in the three buildings. They're missing preps. There's travel time. That's all going to go away. There's also, because we've had to make sure that we meet the language in the contract, we've had to have what's called 0.2 salaries. To make sure that we get those specialty classes in at the three buildings. So those will go away because now you're back into one building. So I took some things into account, not everything, knowing that I would have a little bit of a cushion with that. On the other side, I'm working with not only the buildings but the departments to make sure that, you know, we kind of have some heavy hitters at one time or another. So special ed, we've been smoothing that out over the last couple of years to get it so that we're not $1 million over budget, so that we have everything captured. I think in the budget goals, curriculum is a big thing in this budgetary year, and the strategic plan. I think those things go aligned. One thing that has not happened, Dr. Marsan, I talked about this the other day, is the last couple of years. Last year, we asked to dip into reserves, and we did not have to do that. You'll see at the December meeting when the auditors come that we left with a slight surplus. It wasn't a huge surplus, but we did not dip into our reserves the way that we had originally anticipated. We asked for reserves this year. I think when we first talked about dipping into reserves, we said over the life of the strategic plan, we wanted to use about $3 million of fund balance. We haven't touched a dime of it yet. So that's the other side to where we're at, and my comfort level of saying, yeah, we're a little bit off, but not identifying those big things that would hit. Obviously, there is a little bit of concern with the facility piece after we go through a facilities agenda that there's future things that we have to think about and we have to make serious decisions. If those decisions are going to happen and we're going to move forward with them, then we do have to put that into the mix. But that's, I think that's a bigger conversation on how we're going to move forward with that.
But that's not next year's, this upcoming budget.
That's correct. You spoke about EP, and we talked about stuff that needed to happen at the high school. When I did my presentation about the borrowing capacity and where we're at, I showed you what $66 million would do to our debt service. Right now it's $10 million. It would take it to $14 million. So that obviously, if we're going down that path, then we have a discussion to say, is this, do we slightly raise a little bit more now so that we're not hitting over index and at a higher level to be able to afford or sustain a $4 million swing in our debt service to address our facilities needs, while you still have all the other stuff that's happening in our district. There's curriculum that needs to be addressed. There's, you know, initiatives that have been started that we need to maintain. So I think within our budget that we have right now, that there's money that can be moved around to address those areas that might slightly increase. Technology, we're in a good place with technology where that's sustainable with their budget. Special ed may go up a little bit more, but I think we can get that into a, we're in a place with that where it's not hitting me at such a high level where it was before. The other thing is, now that numbers are identified, I believe special ed funding will come up a little bit because our population is growing a little bit. So as our population grows, not that it covers everything, but that money will come in to sustain any type of increase that would happen in special ed. So my biggest concern is that obviously the salaries and the benefits is where I'm at right now. That's our biggest part of our budget. We went through a process where there's staffing requests that got put in, so we're in a process of looking at that. I think it's a good exercise because I think some people ask for things and don't realize how much it costs, so we're putting that dollar figure with the ask. But there initially was 26 positions at $1.5 million, and we're like, no way. So when you hear that, you know what I mean, then we go down and we start vetting. My goal with our current staffing is to maintain those numbers through retirements or making sure that we repurpose people and that there's equity among buildings. I'm not saying that we might not have to add one or two, but obviously not 26. So that's kind of where I am with, you know, where we at in the budget process. Either budget process, I think we're fine to prepare, and I think we can do one that if there is more latitude to raise above index, then obviously there's some things that we might be able to move forward with a little bit quicker. But again, based upon our conversation last month where I was with it, is if the board as a whole is not willing to even go above index or even have that conversation, then there is no sense in doing a preliminary budget, because that's the whole reason you do it, is because you're applying for exceptions. That's the whole reason that you do it. So if there's not a comfort level to give us those parameters to present a budget that is going to be over 2.4, and we present it and you guys come back and say, no way, sharpen your pencils, then we could have prepared that budget from the onslaught knowing that those parameters were there. Mm-hmm. So that's...
Thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm good. Well, you identified some possible savings or some savings, expected savings with transportation, mm-hmm. but we also know that the contract is expiring. Is there any chance of we need additional money to...
That we need to add to this?
Yeah, that we're going
to... I don't anticipate. I think, if anything, the way our current contract is structured, I think we have some saving areas that we can bring that number down. And then, again, there's just some things off the top that I know how much we spend on shuttle buses for Cedarbrook. So that's factored into that. That's all going to go away. You know, there's... In transportation, really, Cedarbrook is a heavy hitter with that, because... instead of busing like normal routes in normal neighborhoods, because Cedarbrook, they're broken up into teams. So those kids, even though they're in that team, they might not live by each other. So it's all specialty routes that are happening when we're busing Cedarbrook students right now. So that's all going to go away, and we can now get back into the neighborhood pickups where we might not need as many buses. I think Jim said he's anticipating we can eliminate at least one or two buses off the Cedarbrook route, and a bus is about $55,000 to $60,000 a year. So,
okay. Yeah. And they're still staying on top of the late buses.
We're all over it.
All the surveys.
We call it the Brian Malloy.
Cut down those costs too. Excuse me, anyway.
Yeah, question for Dr. Michelle, I guess. At this point, and I know this is probably highly speculative, but do you see anything in just been projected in populations that would indicate that we would need some net increase in numbers of teachers? I know there's a trade-off you're talking about in terms of retirees and people coming in, attrition, but that we might need more teachers either like at the elementary school level. We don't have any bumps coming through or increases happening for us?
Nothing more than what we've traditionally always planned for, anticipating new growth, but nothing significant. Where I'm thinking that we need to have, I think we got through that bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that.
Yeah, it's pretty much stabilized now.
Yeah.
And that's keeping the class sizes where we kind of sort of like we need to.
Well, that's a good question. I think that's a conversation we'll at some point we'll have to visit as a board, because we visited that conversation several years ago. Discussions were had and there was not. There are districts who are very specific, where board members are adamant about, we believe what the research suggests in terms of class size, and that when a K through 2 size gets over 19, yeah, we want to add another section. I haven't heard that. Well, we have good class sizes. I'm not concerned about them being overly excessive. They fall within the range, but there is some language around the number 25. and there are some who argue that maybe it shouldn't be 25 and it should be 23. And if it is, then that's where other experiences have led me to believe that that's when you start adding a lot of teachers every single year because of that.
Well, I've always maintained that it's, you can't really look at districts across the board and say because 25 works out there or 27 works there or 23 works over there, that means pick an average and that's what you should be. You've got to look at your own children and what their requirements are, what their needs are, and if you have children where they need to, you know, your class size needs to be at 19. It's not, it's going to be dysfunctional at 25, or you're okay at 25.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. We do have, and I think that is, I chuckled at it myself, when we ask principals, please identify your classroom needs. And that's, you just open Pandora's box. Well, a principal would say, here's, and teachers have requested as well, because at the end of June last year, May and June, teachers articulated that they have seen an increase in their 20 years in the district, the level of need that children are coming to the school with, that they didn't have that previous experience when they first started 18, 20 some odd years ago. There are those requests that come up to that 1.5 is a lot around specialists and special ed aides to be able to take that 24 and be able to have an extra person to help provide instruction, facilitate the classroom. So we do have a lot of principals who are saying, I need more support inside the classroom based on the level of need.
And I still believe, and you know this as well as anybody, but I'm going to say that I just, for you guys who are still going to be here, please keep those early years small, those classrooms small, because you don't want to have an achievement gap. Just don't let it open. Just keep those kids moving ahead at the earliest ages so they don't fall behind. Mm-hmm. So you're going to pay now or pay later.
Yep.
And it's very painful later, as we will see. Mr. Krishna.
I brought this up the last time we had a budget discussion, the idea of the possibility that we may be achieving savings from special ed because we're doing more in district. Can we get a sense of how much we're spending on out-of-district placement and to see if there's any trend line going down because we're doing more in district?
Actually, one of the requests in the budget proposal is to bring a significant number of our students within the IU back to the district, which would require additional staffing, which in the long run would save us significantly more.
Exactly.
In terms of what
salary is,
in terms of what the IU,
right.
We're being charged with the IU because of the need,
right.
A tremendous amount of money. And in reflection, if over the next couple of years we bring students back, hire additional staff, it's a significant saving versus the over $2 million that we're paying for the IU for autistic support, which those numbers and one of the proposals which I see, our numbers are going up in terms of students who are on the spectrum and the need for that.
It's not just the IU though, it's also the private school placements where we might be able to serve their needs here if we have better in-district program.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
But that's some of the challenges with our inability to bring someone back into the school because we just don't currently have the structure to be able to support that that young man or young woman when they come here.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. Thank you.
Mr.
Williams. You seem
She threw you off, right? She said nothing is threw you off.
She was so shocked. It's 10:40.
We thought you had at least a good 20 minutes.
She guessed my question anyway.
Yes.
At least I don't know if the board should see that.
This question is just about the debt service. Mm-hmm. And at what point does our debt for Cedar Brook begin to move into a place where we can take on more debt without, you know, risking our...
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Our max, yeah.
So
I know. I'm not a financial.
No, that's okay. So
I apologize for my.
You're saying
we keep a level debt service.
At what point is there debt service? Does it become feasible for us to borrow more to increase our debt without getting into that area that you referred to earlier?
We're about there. I mean, 10 million is a lot of. You want 10 to 12% of your overall budget. 8 to 10 is where they like to see you. Mm-hmm. So I think we're right in that range. I think my.
8 to 10% of your total budget is attributed, can be attributed. It's a good range
it's
for
a good
debt
range
services.
For debt service payments.
Okay.
So we're at about 10 million right now. So when you keep that in mind, and that 10 million includes the borrowing for Cedar Brook, so that's built in there. It's not going to go up because we already borrowed that money for Cedar Brook. So when I talked about going from 10 to 14, we're now talking about EP and doing some stuff at the high school. So I always explain to Dr. Marseille and people like this. For me, time is a good thing for me when it comes to debt service. For us in our facilities needs, it's not, because we need to get it done. But for me, the farther you can span it out, that's the more time that we're paying down the other debt,
right.
And revenues are growing, and that gives us that capability to do that. We also have opportunities for refinancing to bring that payment down, like we did in the in the last couple of years. So time is a friend for me when it comes to debt service, but unfortunately we're in a position where that's not a luxury that we have.
And your $66 million, I think, was over the next 3 years.
It was 3 year span whenever it starts. So for me, it's huge. I always talk about a draw schedule. It's not necessarily, I give that snapshot that whenever we start that clock running, that over that 3 year period, that is when that increase from 10 to 14 is gonna happen. Mm-hmm. It's all dependent on when you borrow the money. So we cannot get hit with it right up front. It could be the last 2 years, depending on when we need that money to pay the contractors. Because there are laws in place that you can't just borrow the whole 66 and sit on it for the next 4 years. You have to use it within a certain time frame.
But from a capacity perspective, if we were to borrow $66 million in the next 3 years,
that
odds are our average budget, our average revenues are going to be lower in the next 3 years than they will in the 3 years following. Does that make sense? So if our budget continues to go up even 1.5%, 2.5% each year,
your
debt
capacity
also grows because it's a percentage of your total budget. So if you delay things 2 years, then you've got even more.
Things that impact debt capacity is your revenues, because they take a 3 year average and it's times 225% of that. And then the other thing is the amount of debt that you carry. So the less amount of debt you carry and the more your revenues are, that number, the ability for you to borrow goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I guess. Go for it. Good. Kara, on the bond issue we have now to pay for Cedar Brook, how much is left over that we'll, of course, use at the high school primarily?
I believe, what is it, like $8 million over top of what
approximately we $8 million that we can use for the high school. Because
let me go back now, because part of that was used for PBL and the mods. So I think
some
out of that,
some of it was already
yes,
used.
That, and that was anticipated. That's what we anticipated doing, because we were doing that plus the gym. So
but there's still approximately $7 million in there.
Yes.
Yeah. And in our unassigned reserves, how much do we have in there?
I don't know off the top of my head. I have to get back to you on that.
10 million? Tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it's like 8. We're usually about 6 to 8%.
Okay. And the capital reserve?
10.
Okay. And I guess the other thing, I don't know if the board wants to decide this month or whatever, is deciding if you want to vote on the opt-out, at the next meeting or not. We don't have to. I'm just saying you got a new board coming on and so forth. I don't see the will of the board going over 2.4%, but I may be reading the will of the board wrong. I mean, if it was up to me, I don't want to put this on the new board members. I'm for voting for opting out in the upcoming meeting. That's just my opinion.
I concur with that.
Okay.
I concur.
I do too.
I concur on top of their concurrences.
That makes sense.
Yeah, well, you just got your straw vote.
Yeah.
So,
and that said,
we, it sounds like you just about everybody's concurring in that we could go ahead and vote for the opt out in the next meeting.
That's right, neither will they.
It doesn't mean that 26 people goes away, it just means you don't have to vote.
Yes.
I mean,
we're creative. We still got work to do.
We do. Good?
Yeah. Yeah. Just, so that, I know the opt out. I mean, I'm definitely for the opt out. But that allows you to build a budget with 0%, which gives us, right now, we have a gap of 0%, unless we did something else, right? Because we wouldn't even be able to cover the increase for salaries
correct.
And benefits.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
Okay, and then.
I'm sorry, did you just ask if they could build a 0%?
No.
Okay, all right. Good, I'm sorry. Keep going. Keep moving.
She was so upset because she didn't ask a question.
Before we move forward, comments from public. Don't look too long back there.
Dan doesn't have any questions either.
To this year.
Okay, so this is the normal snapshot. So where we are right now is about 71.67%. Again, there's always a little bit of a gap because of timing of posting and when we get things in. I know there was a little bit delay of getting some stuff in from the state's office, so there might be some tax payments and other payments. One of the reasons that we're down when you compare us to 16-17, though, is if you look at the state, because the state has not been releasing money because of the whole budget thing, that we're about 11% off from where we were last year, but we're right on target. There's nothing that's flagging me that something's coming under. On the expenditure side, we are a little bit, this always goes back to when payrolls fall. So we already had a payroll in the month of November, so that's why we're a little bit higher when we're comparing the two sides with salaries and benefits, because we did have a payroll. So. But we're right on target because we should be at about 33% and we're at about 32% in spend. This is the other snapshot, just kind of breaks the expenditures down a little bit differently into major categories instead of those 100, 200, 300s. So there's nothing here that's really flagging me that we're over or that we need to be concerned about anything. And just here, I'm going to go through this very quickly because I'm sure you guys are all up to date on information that came down from the state and about how they plan on paying for the $32 billion budget that they approved in June.
They apparently don't care.
So the revenue package, I identified the money and how those were categorized. Obviously, the biggest is borrowing against the tobacco settlement fund at $1.5 billion. The other big thing, and this was big, and I'm going to direct you to under our website, and I put the link here, under our website, if you go under finance or the business office, on the side, you know how it has annual budgets, it has different things. I now added a line that says state budget update, so I'm going to start putting stuff there just for information and getting resources there. CASBO did a great presentation that really broke down the state budget and how everything kind of laid out. The big thing is about the school code changes. Really, really the information that was interesting to read is about the economic furloughs and what that means and just steps that boards have to go through in the process of economic furloughs. So I'm going to show you that link, but please go ahead and visit that. I believe I provided that to the board in the update, but I also wanted to put it out to the public so that they see and understand. So these are the big areas in the school code that changed. Some are very impactful. It's amazing, like I said, when you start reading through the economic furlough piece. And there is the link right there that will take you right to that presentation. But again, if you go to the business office, and it's state budget update or information, and it's that presentation is under there. So that's all I have.
Any questions?
Yeah, oops, sorry.
Questions?
I just want to thank the federal government for the very generous payment so far. $720.
I'll pass on that new payment.
I think it's rounded.
All right. Sarah, thank you for that.
Yeah. Motion?
Second?
All right.
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.